Hello, and welcome to Introducing Me. I'm your host, Sarah. I started this podcast to get to know other people and lifestyles and discover more about myself. Each episode, I will give a new guest a chance to discuss their background, culture, interests, or whatever they want to talk about to help increase all of our own worldviews. Today, I would like to introduce you to Jason Muth. He is an LGBTQ+ dad who has founded 3 real estate investment and short-term rental businesses. So he's here to talk about parenthood, ditching a traditional job, and just more on his life in general. So thank you so much, Jason, for being here today. Why don't you go ahead and tell the audience more about yourself?
Thank you, Sarah. I feel like you summarized it better than I probably could have. That was a really great elevator pitch. But hello, my name is Jason Muth. And yes, everything Sarah said is true. I am outside Boston. We live in Newburyport, Massachusetts, and we operate short-term rentals. I'm now an official entrepreneur and real estate investor. And sometimes it's hard to say that because I was never this. You know, a lot of people start this out of college and they want to be a business owner and an entrepreneur. And next thing you know, they're inventing stuff or they operate a restaurant or a tech company or whatnot. I worked a traditional job for a long time, for well over 2 decades, longer than that, but I like to be younger than I really am. I worked in the media business for a long time, variety of roles, research, mostly sales. The back half of it was digital sales. And I loved it. It's a great industry, but you know, all things come to an end. And that industry is very much musical chairs. And every year they pull out a couple chairs and there's fewer seats for everybody. So when my number got called, I already had my plan B in place, which was great. So the plan B was short-term rentals, which we've been investing in since 2015. I'm sorry, 2016. That's when we bought them. I'm jumping the gun a little bit, but it has been 8 years. We've been following real estate investments since 2015. We joined a community called Bigger Pockets, which is a fabulous free community. You could pay also for higher level subscriptions, but they have great podcasts. It was the inspiration for the podcast that my husband and I run, which is called the Real Estate Law Podcast. As of this recording, we've recorded about 160 episodes of it, and we're getting some amazing guests on that podcast that are coming to us. A very funny story today, someone I was speaking with about one of our businesses, which is Pride Away Stays, which is a gay-owned short-term rental co-hosting and property management company that serves Provincetown, Massachusetts. One of the most fabulous places in the world. That person invited me to a Zoom webinar that he was having next week. And it was basically, he's a lead that we have that we're hoping that maybe we can manage this person's property. But the person who's speaking on that Zoom is going to be one of our future podcast guests. And he was uber excited to have this person. And I said, oh, that's so funny because we're recording with him next week. It's just kind of how the podcast has evolved. But I can't say I've been in the media business, so I get podcasting and I do love podcasting. And Sarah, I think what you're doing is fantastic here, you know, allowing yourself to learn about people and have folks tell their stories. But we did podcasting because we wanted to build our credibility up a little bit, specifically my husband. You know, I pushed him down the road saying we should podcast. And I think that we're going to start to build a really good network by doing this. And that's exactly what happened. But I was doing that also while I was working my full-time job. So, you know, when that came to an end, the chapter 2 was in place already. And we already were managing our short-term rentals for a couple of years at that point. So it was a relatively easy transition away from having to find another job working for somebody else and deciding to work for myself. I was going to do it anyway. And sometimes we need that kick out of the nest. To force us to kind of make that change in our lives. I probably could have continued doing what I was doing there for a little bit longer. It was not particularly inspiring anymore. It just paid really well and was relatively easy, and we kept performing well. At least I did with what I was responsible for. So, you know, that job ended just because of, you know, circumstance. Like, had nothing to do with poor performance or lashing out. It was really just my time was done. So on I went to the world of entrepreneurship. So we own 5 short-term rental properties in New Hampshire and Provincetown. They are great real estate investments. We were fortunate to have had the foresight to get into those when interest rates were low and when property prices were lower. So, you know, we see the big value in real estate investing. They're in classic vacation destinations for the most part, or places where there is a culture of short-term renting. So we're not really doing this in super residential neighborhoods where people don't have second homes. I realize there's a sensitivity to that across the country. And, you know, we decided to optimize those properties, try to figure out how to operate them really, really well. Up to that point, I'd kind of been doing it in a vacuum, you know, learning as we're doing, learning from online videos and podcasts, and experiences with guests. And we do try to do the best job we can. Like, we're the type of people that we want to race to the top, not to the bottom. So I decided to join a short-term rental mastermind group of real estate investors as a way of continuing my education and building a network up. And that was probably the best decision to have made shortly after my job ended, because immediately I was thrust into a community of people that were supportive, that held us accountable, that were eager to meet with each other and share ideas. Never critical unless it was constructive criticism. It was the complete opposite of working in a high stress industry where everyone is, you know, talking behind your back and there's politics and everything. Like, this is not that at all. So it was very refreshing to kind of have a different approach to my professional network. It gave me the opportunity to just kind of like reinvent and start again. So all the people who knew me from the past knew that I was kind of doing this, and now they have definitely seen the success because I have not been quiet about it. I've made sure that I'm rebranded online on my social media. And I think I did a pretty good job with that. It was one of my priorities last year. But all the new people who I've met really only know me as this. And when I tell them about, you know, chapter one, it's almost surprising to them, you know, that I even had that. So, you know, I would call that transition a success. From a business perspective, you know, our properties, Knockwood, have been doing better and better and better, both as a result of being able to focus on them more, just the gentle, you know, upward trend of the market, and just doing a good job and learning a lot from this mastermind. I mean, we were doing well beforehand, but, you know, we've done even better afterward. So much so that I decided to launch a property management company that specializes in short-term rentals in one of our markets in Provincetown. And we did it there because we didn't want to be just another company that was doing this in New Hampshire. Like, I have a lot of friends that are doing it in New Hampshire, so I didn't particularly want to compete with them. And Provincetown, no one was really doing this particularly well as a gay owned business. There's a lot of people that are doing it themselves in P-Town. There's a lot of people that are running their properties through traditional brokerages and agencies that happen to manage vacation rentals too. And, you know, all the research that we've done whenever we put together comp analysis and that kind of thing, like, they're not really doing that well with them, to be perfectly honest. And then there's national companies that are just not connected to Provincetown. They don't have the gay community in their best interest. They don't know the ins and outs of what happens in town. And it's just another zip code on their list. So we're really trying to be that boutique management company that can speak intelligently to what happens in Provincetown and knows how to run short-term rentals. So, you know, that's kind of the professional side of me. Now, I probably should have mentioned I'm a dad of a soon-to-be five-year-old who we adopted at birth. And that's been quite an eye-opening experience during these past 5 years. But, you know, nothing that I would give back by any means. But that the change in my professional status and COVID all happened at the same time. So it's been kind of a crazy 5 years.
Yeah, definitely. And we can definitely get to, you know, the personal side, family life, and all of that in a little bit. But starting with this, you know, major career shift, as you said, you know, some people do this right out of school and it's kind of their designated career path. And for you, it was more something that started up on the side. You started getting into communities and stuff like that. So what was it first like to get your very first investment property? What was that process like? And then to like have to manage it?
Yeah. It's a great question. It was terrifying because we didn't know what we were doing. The very first time that we got a second mortgage, like I'm sure my father thought I was crazy. They're a little more risk averse than I am. I find myself calculated with what I do. Like we make good decisions with information and then we kind of go with our gut a little bit too. But yeah, I still have that same mortgage today. It's a $691 mortgage that I pay every month, which at the time was like, I can't believe I have to pay this extra $700. And now I'm just like, oh my God, this property does so well. Like, I can't believe my mortgage is that low. And, you know, there's a lot of other expenses too. There's capital improvements. Like we're about to redo parts of our kitchen. You know, there's a leak on the ceiling. So I'm sure there's some roof work that has to get done. You know, there's maintenance of the property. You know, it's not as simple as 700 times 12 and that's all your expenses. There's taxes. There's a lot of stuff that goes into it. But, you know, we didn't know what we were doing. We had a pipe burst on our second guests during the winter. And, you know, we knew that there was the risk of that happening. It had never happened in my life before. But it froze on us when we were up there with a bunch of our friends and family, like for New Year's that year. So I decided just to kind of tell my guests to leave it on a drip, which is the wrong thing to do, because you kind of have to assume that the people that are staying in your property short term know nothing about it. You have to spell everything out. And I even did spell it out and they didn't leave it on a drip. They had a cold night and the pipe burst. You know, like the lesson to me, I was going to get it fixed in the spring. I didn't. And then a disaster happened and, you know, you can't anticipate every problem, but if there are problems that you're aware of, like I've learned that you have to address them very, very quickly. You know, just for everyone's safety and for everyone's satisfaction with the renting. So, you know, that almost broke me. And, you know, I remember when that happened, we were also having an issue with a roof leak in Boston. We had a brand new building that we were on the top floor. Great condo, loved it. We sold it to move up here to Newburyport a couple of years ago. And, you know, tons of snow hit and then tons of rain. So there was tons of water and eventually some of it got inside and some of the insulation started to smell and get moldy. So, you know, we had to move out from our bedroom and have ServPro mitigate it. We're sleeping on a mattress on the floor in the extra bedroom. And then I get the phone call at 2 a.m. that a pipe burst at our rental property. And that it was just like, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? But, you know, you look at the long term and you persevere and you kind of work your way through stuff. And, you know, if it breaks, you fix it. It's really that simple. So, you know, so we knew that we wanted to do some kind of investment and we had some extra money to invest at the time. So my in-laws now live full time down the street from there. And at the time they had kind of a second home that they were that they had fixed up. They were actually doing short-term rentals before we were. We do a lot better, but they actually did it before we did. And they retired there. They now live there full time. And I knew that if we were going to be going up there for the rest of our lives to visit and probably have a child, which we now do, I wanted to stay somewhere comfortable. So one of the properties that we were staying at was their other short-term rental. They had two. They you know, sold that one. And the bed was so uncomfortable. It just wasn't somewhere that I knew I wanted to spend time. And they also have a cat and I'm very allergic. So I'm like, all right, we need to buy something. Let's buy something. So down the street, there was a house for sale and it actually was just the perfect one. The price had been lowered a couple of times. I thought there was something wrong with it. There wasn't. And, you know, that was really the catalyst for everything. That property taught us how to be short-term rental hosts and operators and do it well. That property allowed us to spend time up there at the lake together and with my in-laws, meet the neighbors. We're good members of the community. That property allowed us somewhere to escape to when the world shut down during COVID and we thought they were going to close the borders in all the states. So we left Boston and we're like, we're out of here. And we went up there for 3 months and did some great outdoor projects and wrote it out there. And that house has turned into three houses at that same lake. We bought one two doors down, we built one, which was a fantastic project. And it, you know, it's funny how one property can just turn into everything. And it's hard to conceive this if you're not a real estate investor, but we're such big proponents of how to build wealth through real estate. And, you know, it's not greed and it's not, you know, it is capitalism, but this is how we feed our family, right? Like everybody chooses to do something with their lives. Sometimes they do it for somebody else and they're beholden to them. This allows us to do it for ourselves and we're beholden to ourselves. So that one property kind of led us down this pathway. And that was it. It's been 8 years.
Mm-hmm. And you're specifically in the short-term rental business. And, you know, you mentioned how these areas tend to be short-term rental areas. You know, you're not buying up houses in major residential areas where then you're renting to long-term tenants. So with that kind of turnover in guests, what sort of conversations do you have with your guests? That do you kind of accept every guest that wants to come in? Do you sometimes have issues or need to like say, we can never rent to you again because you have this like multi-network of homes?
Mm-hmm. So most of the time people just stay in one of our properties and then we kind of never hear from them again. There is a percentage that will come back. And there is a handful that have stayed in multiple properties. Like they've stayed in one, they liked it, they had a different need, and they're going to a different property. Like we actually have somebody coming back that was in our smallest of the three homes in New Hampshire. And then they just reached back out to me and they said they're coming back and they needed more space. So they saw that we own this other one, so they booked that one. For the most part, like 98% of the guests are great. Maybe 99%. You know, it's probably, if you're not doing this, you probably think that everyone is messy and disrespectful. But if you set the right message, meaning you explain to people that this is your home, your family spends time here, some of your neighbors live here year round, your in-laws are down the street, you decorated it with a lot of care, if you really explain like the heart and soul that you put into the property, in my opinion, people will treat it better. It doesn't mean everyone has. You know, we've certainly walked into situations where we're like, why would there's a difference between leaving it perfectly, leaving it, you know, a little messy to clean up, leaving it a mess, and leaving it like, why would you leave a property this way? You know, like I've walked back into. And I don't do the cleanings. Like, you know, we hire people to do the cleanings and, you know, we have neighbors and other people that cleaning service that do them. But I actually walked into property once before a neighbor did because I happened to be doing something and I couldn't believe some of the stuff was left in the kitchen. And I reached back out to the guests and I was like, I don't understand why you did this. Like, why did you think it was a good idea to leave this pot with all this burnt rice in it and all this lettuce and a colander on the counter? You know, like we always remember the bad ones, just like in any sport, you remember the bad calls. You don't remember the 99 calls that were called correctly. You know, so it's easy to remember the bad guests. But there've been a handful of times I've called a guest afterward, and usually it's a combination of anger and disappointment. More disappointment. I'm like, you know, I'm really surprised that you would have chosen to leave it this way. Like my cleaner was really upset given the amount of stuff that they had to clean, and I realize there's a cleaning fee involved, but like this is like above and beyond. And, you know, usually I get a couple times I've gotten an apologetic response. I've left some bad reviews. I tend not to leave. I mean, I do have a responsibility to other hosts with bad guests, but I tend not to initiate reviews and I tend not to give bad reviews unless it's like completely warranted. But again, most of the guests are fine. And the reality with these properties is, you know, I underwrite these properties so they do what I need them to do at 50% occupancy. So half the time, nobody is there, you know, and yeah, we talk about housing and how, and you know, some housing instability with communities and the price of real estate going up, you know, but the reality is people could choose to spend their money however they want to, right? If we choose to buy houses, we buy houses. We're the ones that are putting the money up, the down payment, the risk, paying the insurance, you know, so like given, like within the rights of the law, we're allowed to do that. Communities should be building more houses, right? But that responsibility doesn't come on me because I don't have the money to do that. That's going to be somebody else that can help with that. But with something like what we're doing, you know, in this community in New Hampshire, some people live there year round and some people have second homes there that they don't short-term rent and they literally just sit there for 80% of the year. And other people like myself, we bring people to the area. We bring people to the area to enjoy it, to share it, to create memories, to help pay our taxes so we could still have the property. We keep our properties looking really good, you know, so we take a lot of care in what we offer, and we try to get the best guests that we can get. You know, we're not going to lower our price to the point that we're going to get really, really bad guests, but bad guests happen at every price point. You know, you can get really bad guests that are spending $1,000 a night on a property, and they're bad because they think they could trash it because they are spending that much. You can get bad guests that are spending very little on the property, who just kind of happen to be a different, like a different grade or caliber of renter. So we try to set the expectations correctly with our messaging, with our images, our photos. You know, we depict the property in a way that should show that it's a nice property. So it tends to attract the people that either can afford to go there or understand kind of the rules of a property like that. You know, we have really clear communication with our guest book, our interactive guide. We send out multiple messages throughout the course of the stage or the booking to stay journey. So we'll send messages shortly after people book that are automated. I will jump into any conversation if I think I need to clarify something or answer a specific question. I always make it, you know, sound like it's human and me with all the conversations that we have, so it doesn't feel like an assistant or AI that is sending this stuff out. We send messaging like shortly before someone arrives, shortly after they've arrived, shortly before they're about to depart, and then shortly after departure as well. You know, so that constant communication, I think, shows the guests that we take pride in being hosts and hoping that they have a nice stay at our property. And, you know, we realize that things are going to happen, and we make that clear. You know, sometimes things break, whatever it is. Just if it happens, just let us know, and, you know, we could address it afterward. But the properties get cleaned more than my house, like where I'm recording this from. We don't have a cleaner for our house, but I have a cleaner that cleans some of our properties 40 times a year. So, you know, we're able to address issues as they come up, and things just kind of stay pretty tidy over time.
Right. I think even just noting that, like, you don't have a cleaner for your own home shows, like, what you are putting into these properties and how you want, you know, guests to treat the places. Mm-hmm. Now, you keep talking about we. It is not just you running these businesses. So what is kind of the day-to-day expectation or responsibilities that you and your husband each have for these different businesses?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when I was working full-time elsewhere, you know, we were weekend warriors. So we were often going up on the weekends and painting, cleaning, resupplying, hanging stuff, you know, you name it, at that original property. We built a patio during COVID outside. He built most of it. I had all the stuff delivered. I helped with what I wanted to do. And then he, you know, jumped in with some things that he learned how to do online. So he'll help with a lot of that with these properties. You know, the second one that we bought at that lake, you know, is technically in an LLC that the two of us co-own. So, you know, he does have a greater responsibility to that property. I mean, we're married, so technically it's all kind of one big bucket, but you know, as a lot of married people have, there's a little bit of what's yours is yours and what's mine is mine. And eventually, you know, if you kick it, then it's all somebody's. But, you know, I'm on the hook personally for some of this stuff. And, you know, we're on the hook as an LLC for some. As of right now, we're going to change that, though. But yeah, so he'll help out with a lot of that labor of things that either I don't want to do or don't want to figure out, because he'll figure that out. He has a lot of the home tech in the properties. You know, so I think if I were to try to set up a new TV or something, I could do it. But, you know, he already has the systems in place to kind of get that easily integrated. So I kind of let him do that stuff. I do all the guest communication, all the pricing, all the marketing. He barely touches it. He's an attorney, so I don't want him touching the sales stuff. Attorneys don't know. They usually don't train them how to sell in law school. And you know, they're very by the book with how they position things. And sometimes you need to have a different level of communication. So I take care of all that. I take care of all the accounting. He actually set up all of our, well, I should say he set up all of our bookkeeping to start. And then we just hired a bookkeeper to, you know, transfer all that over to them, because, you know, you have to treat all this like a business. Even when it's just one, if you're listening to this and you want to buy one house as your first, second home, you still have to treat it as a business. And that was a mistake we made leading into it. Like, all the funds were kind of sloshed between a couple accounts, but we've gotten that all cleaned up as of now. And he was very instrumental in getting that set before we switched it over to a bookkeeper. So, you know, those are a lot of the key things that he's helped with each of these properties. I think he likes doing it because he's also a real estate broker and an attorney. So, you know, we talk about this kind of stuff a lot, whether it's on a long call or just kind of things around the house. With Pride Away Stays, which is the property management company in Provincetown, you know, we just launched that in November of 2023. So, you know, you might be hearing this shortly thereafter, or you might be hearing this, you know, many years in the future, because the internet keeps things forever. But he is involved as a name on our website, and he technically can be the counsel that we counsel if we need counsel. I have another business partner for that property, my friend Ethan Sobel, who is also a property owner in Provincetown. He owns a second home there, and he has another second home in Mashpee, which is another community in Cape Cod. So when I approached him with this opportunity, he thought about it and he decided to join me. So we're doing that together. And then, you know, our extended network of people that help with things, you know, cleaners and handy people, and, you know, the deeper layer beyond that, plumbers, electricians, carpenters, you know, folks that, septic pumping companies, you know, just things that you never knew you needed, exterminators. You know, we kind of keep decent records of all the different contractors that we've worked with. And I think that they are an extended version of our team, because part of what you do when you hire somebody, or part of what you do when you rent someone short-term rental, is if they're a good host, they know all these people. And they have a, you know, it used to be called a Rolodex back in the day. You'd have a Rolodex of cards of people, and you're often hiring people based on who they know. Well, we build out our network in all these markets over time, and suddenly, you know, we know a lot of people. And if somebody is buying into the market, you know, they don't even know where to start. They don't know who to call for this long list of things that you'll have to do if you're a new property owner. And that's one of the good things about doing this over time and understanding kind of the types of people that need to be on your team on the ground, is that you build it up and then you build backups to those people. And, you know, it's literally all spreadsheets, phone numbers, email addresses, text conversations, whatever. But I'm pretty good at knowing who to contact if a situation comes up somewhere. And if I don't know who to contact, I know how to find someone to contact. So that's kind of how we divide up a lot of the labor with these businesses. I mean, like for the transactions that we've purchased, I believe he's either acted as the real estate agent or the attorney on almost all of them. There might have been some conflicts along the way, but, you know, having him as that person has been good. Or he's referred us out. I don't remember, you know, every single one of those transactions, if he was the one that was writing up the offer and that kind of thing. But, you know, that's another way that he's been helpful.
Right. And so then what has it been like, you know, obviously your daughter's not quite five, she's not yet in the family business, but what has it been like bringing her just into your life as you're navigating this new world?
So I do kind of think she is in the business, and here's why. We use her for our marketing. We don't pay her yet, although we should be paying her, because technically we could pay her as an employee and start putting some money away in a Roth IRA for her, even at this early age. It's actually something that a lot of people do with their kids. But you can't just do that to your kids and not really have them doing anything. So we kind of do use her in our marketing. She's on my business card. She's on my website for Pride Away Stays. I do that intentionally because I think it's important to humanize people. And I think that the pandemic has allowed us all to see the human side of each other instead of just the person that's at the office every day. I know things have shifted a lot back toward people going into office spaces. But you know, during Zoom conversations, it's not unheard of to have a cat walk in the background or a child screaming. Some people have a higher tolerance to it than others, but you know, I learned that it's important to see people for more than just your coworker, your team member, your subordinate, the person you answer to. So, you know, I've definitely integrated her into conversations, whether it's communications I have with a guest who might be bringing kids to whatever that area is. And then I will, you know, make sure I drop the fact that, oh, I did this with my daughter last time I was there. We just had a conversation with somebody who was visiting one of our properties from New Hampshire, bringing a couple kids, wanted to see what things there were to do. Now, we have this in our interactive guide, places to hike and places to eat. But I asked, you know, what age are your children? And she mentioned it. Like, I think the oldest is about 5 or 6. And I said, all right, well, we just went to the Children's Museum of New Hampshire in Dover, New Hampshire, a couple weeks ago. And I brought my almost 5-year-old, and she loved it. It was like a play session from 1 to 4. It was, you know, you learned a lot about the Kuchika River and the area, and they had all these like little like, things to do inside the museum. So I highly recommend that. And, you know, by being able to have weave that into the conversation, it humanizes me a little bit more. It shows that we're in the area too, that we're not just, we don't have this property that we never go to, that we just rent out, and who would want to go there? We wouldn't want to go there. Of course you want to go there. We go to all these properties. So I do use her in the business with my communications, with my marketing, and she comes to all the houses. She knows them all. I don't know what she says to her friends, right? But, you know, we're raising this child who has 6 homes, which is a little weird, but, you know, she refers to them by their color. Or like when we went down to Provincetown last week, you know, she was excited to go to Provincetown, and she gets there and she remembers the memories of the beach across the street and the murals that are in town. You know, she'll dance up to them because she did it last time that she was there. So it kind of brings back a lot of memories. So it is a little strange of an upbringing to be, you know, raising somebody that has multiple things that are kind of theirs. But strangely enough, you know, each of these properties, she kind of knows what she used to watch at that property. She knows where the toys are at that property because we leave toys for our guests. So I think we're trying to instill a sense of, hey, these are all our properties. Yeah, but this is how we make money. You know, we share these properties with other people and they pay us rent to be in these properties, which allows us to go eat and do lots of fun things. So, you know, we make sure we say that to her all the time. And, you know, my philosophy could be very different from other people's philosophies that have multiple homes. We only have these as our primary home or to generate income. You know, they're all kind of second homes or they're investment properties, but none of them are just to have a home to go to and then have it sit there otherwise, right? Like we're intentional with our money. We want to make sure that these properties, you know, will bring in income to either pay for itself or bring income for us, which then allows us to go do fun things with our kid.
Yeah. The intentionality of all of your properties and, you know, having her be able to kind of like realize what these places mean to you and how they are, you know, not just yours, but, you know, you share them with others. Now, if she were to be like me when I was a young adult and I told my father, stop taking pictures of me, like I was not the person who wanted to be behind a camera. If she ever said to you like, Dad, I don't want to be in your marketing, like, is that something that would be easy for you to be able to like work through with kind of how it's set up now?
Yeah, I mean, she doesn't get that right now. I mean, later on, if she doesn't want to be in it, like she'll be older anyway. I'd rather have a young, you know, a toddler and a baby because that works better.
Because they're cute.
Like, yeah. And, you know, I look at some people that are a business on Airbnb and they have their logo as their photo. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, put a picture of yourself and your kid in there. Because when somebody clicks on them to learn about who you are as the host, they see a human. They don't just see like the name of your business. Like that to me, I think is a big miss for a lot of people that are running properties on there. So yeah, of course she'll have that. She will have that privilege to say, stop using my image in things. You know, as you'd imagine, we probably have about 25,000 photos and videos of our child, because I take pictures of her everywhere. And, you know, I would like to think that later on in life, she'll be happy that I was able to meticulously capture her life in as she grew up. She does like looking at old pictures of herself. She loves looking at old videos of her screaming, because I took a lot of those videos to remind myself what those years were where the child screams a lot, you know, like babies that are just, do you have a baby or a child?
I do not, no.
Yeah. But, you know, babies scream. They just do. And they scream because they're uncomfortable and they can't communicate, you know, and you have to figure out why they're uncomfortable. But, you know, those screams just go through you. They just do. So I made sure I recorded a couple of them so I never forget them. But she just gets a kick out of it when I play them back. She's like, show me as a little baby screaming. And then, like, I'll show it. And then she'll, like, emulate herself, like, as to what she was. And I'm like, yeah, we had to listen to that, like, you know, 3 a.m, many, many nights.
Yes. Yeah, no, I think it's great that she has that kind of, like, good relationship with her past self. I don't know if that, like, makes sense wording it that way. But so since you know, mentioned the screaming phase, you know, making sure you were capturing all of this, does this mean, you know, you're good with just adopting one kid, or are there future kids in your future potentially?
We're done.
There's nothing wrong with that.
We are done. It's a lot. Mm-hmm. It's a lot. It really is. I'm older too, mm-hmm. you know, so I don't think I have the patience to do it again. You know, there's no regrets at all. And this was it was the right situation for everybody involved, in many, many ways. So, you know, she's a blessing for everybody, all of our parents, us. But no, I can't do it again. We're complete. We're good.
Yeah. That's definitely an okay stance to have. Now, are you willing to talk a little bit about kind of just what the adoption process was like?
Yeah, very much. So we kind of dragged our feet a little bit with it. Like when we got married, we don't want anyone to bring gifts, but we said if you wanted to bring a gift, we have a fund that you could donate to, which would be an adoption fund. And, you know, it's not... At the time, I think the overall adoption expenses for us were about $40,000. This was back in 2019. We paid for our own wedding. But we got back about $20,000 in gifts. So, you know, it helped. It just sat in an account. We got married in 2014. Yeah, it'll be 10 years this year. And we adopted her in 2019 as a newborn. So there's about 4 years in between. 2 years into that process is when we bought our first second home. And I think that the following year after we did that, people started asking, like, so all that money that we gave you at the wedding, like, is that this home? So we said, no, it's still sitting in the account where that money was. And then, you know, we'd made contact with a local adoption agency here. Adoptions with Love is the name of them. They're in Newton, Massachusetts. They have a good relationship with a number of states, because every state kind of has different rules. And I realize that things are changing very, very quickly with the political climate that we're in. But back then, you know, they had a lot of experience in working with all different types of parents, single parents, two mom, two dad, mixed race, younger, older, you name it. We were told that a lot of same-sex couples, a lot of two-daddy households tend to get picked quicker. The only reason I was given why is that usually the birth mom is the one that's making the selection as to who she'd like to place their child with. It's not the case in all times, because sometimes they will work with a hospital or a state where a baby was born and then you know, left at the hospital, or a baby was dropped off at a safe haven, like a firehouse or something, you know, because a lot of places have a no questions asked, like, okay, we'll take your baby, you know, on you go. So there's definitely those situations where somebody will get called saying, we have a child, the child was just born 2 days ago. It's now in our custody. Like, do you want to come and adopt the baby? Our situation, the birth mom selected us, you know, was pregnant and realized that, you know, she, because of her life situation, you know, she could not raise this child. So, you know, she contacted the adoption agency. The adoption agency is kind of they market to two different types of people. I mean, for lack of a better term, like, they didn't market to us because we had friends that went through them, but they have to find the parents and they have to find the birth parents, and they're having two different conversations and matching them up. So, you know, we've been in touch with our agency for a couple of years, but we just kind of had the paperwork and sat on it until finally, you know, they called us and said, are you guys really serious about doing this? And we're like, oh, okay. You know, you're right. We are. And I remember calling my husband and I said, all right, they called us again. Like, we got to get these papers in if we're really going to do this. So we did, got everything ready. We did a big book, like a catalog of photos and answering questions, basically showing our life off. You write a letter to the potential, you know, person who's going to place you, you know, saying why you want to do this. And then they have a bunch of families that have done the same thing. And then when they are working with a birth parent who's going to place their baby, if they have a good match or who they think are good matches, they will send that information to that birth parent. And then they will decide who they want to speak with, if anybody. And then again, sometimes it's as simple as, you know, a baby's been born and you're the next one on the list. But it definitely, we were asked a number of questions, you know, like about if there is a consideration for religion, for race. We were not allowed to select gender. That's like the one thing that we couldn't talk about, or couldn't say, I want a baby boy or baby girl. They asked questions about the tolerance for substance abuse in utero, because, you know, the birth moms are usually not in, they're probably not the healthiest, most, you know, trendy workout parents. They're probably in a situation that they, you know, maybe it's a bad, maybe bad life choices or bad circumstance or whatever, that there might be some substance abuse going on as well. So we talk about that. We actually received an entire background once we matched, meaning that the birth parents selected us. We received their background through the agency, which we then shared with our physician to review. And that's all part of the process. And, you know, after that consultation, we were told, you know, here are the only things that we would consider that you should look out for. And otherwise, you know, they thought it was worth going ahead with. So we did. And we spoke with the birth mom a couple times before our daughter was born. And then when it was time to go to the hospital, we drove all the way out to Indiana where she was born and, you know, had a carload of stuff, baby seat, everything, went to the hospital, met her there. We had a different room in the hospital. They put us up in the hospital and we were there for the birth. And then, you know, the baby, she was ours. You know, she spent a little bit of time with the birth mom in the hospital. And, you know, the state of Indiana goes pretty quickly with their adoption process. So after all the paperwork was signed, you know, we went to court later on that week, and the judge granted us custody and we were allowed to leave the state. And we couldn't leave the state before that because then we'd be kidnapping a child. So we kind of planned to spend about 2 weeks in Indiana, but we were only there for a week. Other states, it's a lot longer. We have friends that, you know, they've been away for like 6 weeks in the state and you have to put up, you have to find accommodations. You have to like just wait basically until a court date. But yeah, then we were free to go. Then we drove home with a baby.
Well, that's a bit of a drive from Indiana back up to New England. So what was that first drive like?
I mean, we took turns, you know, like now you have a baby in the car, which, you know, up to that point, I'd only had my dog and us. So it was very different. We, you know, you learn it as you do it, right? Like we went to a couple parent classes beforehand, but, you know, we didn't really know what we were doing. We read up on some stuff. We figured we'd figure it out along the way and everything seemed to work out. But we stayed overnight, like at one or two hotels along the way. You know, but you're in a hotel with a 4-day-old and you're like, oh my God, you know, how has our life changed? You know, so sleeping was tough. You know, you have to feed the baby every 2 or 3 hours. You know, there's going to be bouts of discomfort because the baby is now in the world and not, you know, in the comfort of a human's womb. So, you know, we had to deal with those screams. But we stopped at my parents' house along the way, so they got to meet her. And then we made it back up to our home in Boston at the time, and friends came over, and, you know, my in-laws came over. And then you're a parent.
Great. Well, I appreciate, you know, you sharing all of that. And it sounds like, you know, even though you dragged your feet a little bit in the beginning, it was an overall good experience for you. I know that adoption is very different, you know, depending on where you go. And I was not expecting you to say that you were going out to Indianapolis to get your baby. So the fact, you know, that there is that network and you had a good experience with it. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. You know, I mean, we could have very easily gone within the state or flown somewhere. You don't know where the baby is going to come from when you work with an agency that works in multiple states. You know, there's other ways to go about adoption. You can do it through the state. Every state is different. We have friends who have adopted, you know, where they were foster parents first, and then they fostered over time, and then eventually they made, you know, the adoption went through, and you know, they became the legal parents of that child. So people can certainly go through adoption that way. There's tons of other ways to do it, I would imagine. I think every state's different. I was told that it's a little bit longer of a process now. I mean, we honestly were holding a child probably 3 months after our paperwork was done, which is wild, mm-hmm. right? It was, you know, we were selected just not even 2 months before she was born. You know, so we didn't have 9 months to plan like a lot of people do, or 6 months. You know, it's like sometimes you don't know you're pregnant for mm-hmm. a couple of months, and, you know, then you get through the first trimester and you know, the health of the baby is good. So you start telling people and everything, and everyone starts planning and they're excited for you. You know, you have your gender reveal stuff, if people still do that. And then, you know, you have 6 months of planning. We didn't have that. We literally did not have that at all. So it was very much drop everything and go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, thanks again, you know, for sharing that. Before I start to wrap things up here at the end, is there anything else you would like to share with the listeners, whether about business, personal, really just anything at this point?
I'd encourage them, if they want to hear more about our business endeavors, to check out the Real Estate Law podcast, which, you know, we release a new episode every Tuesday. It's always an interview. So we've had great guests of all types. Today we had somebody that we interviewed. The episode come out about a month. It's all about mindset. There's a guy in Ottawa that is also a music producer and a real estate investor, and, you know, great with his community, very visible, has kind of built up a neat little business. And, you know, we talked about visualizations and, you know, how he kind of visualized these things by putting his mind to something he was going to do and manifesting it. That's the word I'm looking for. Some of that stuff sounds a little hokey, but some of it is legitimate. And I've really kind of understood that in these past couple of years of building a new network and entrepreneurship, why manifestation is important. So we'll talk about financial independence and manifestation and then tactical real estate things, you know, so ways to build up an empire, ways to protect yourself, legal issues, commercial real estate, industrial real estate, lots of stuff. So yeah, so we talk about all those things on the podcast. I'd encourage people to to check that out if you're interested in learning more about what we talk about or about us. Beyond that, I mean, it's been an interesting life so far, as I'm sure a lot of us have. I'm very much enjoying where things are right now. You know, life is not super stressful, although my father just called, so we'll see what that's all about. But it is my parents' anniversary today, and I tried getting a hold of him earlier, so perhaps he's just calling back from that. I'm hoping that that's the case. But I'm at the age right now where your parents call and you're like, oh, geez, who died? What happened? You know, we all get older. That's the stuff I'm not looking forward to. You know, I'm an only child, and, you know, my parents are not in the best health, and I'm approaching 50. So, you know, that's a combination of things where I'm probably about to have some different life experiences in the coming years that I've seen happen around me. And, you know, I just have an attitude that I'll get through it somehow, but super eager to see where things go with Pride Away Stays. I think that we're onto something. We've had a ton of conversations with people in Provincetown who, you know, are eager to have a company like ours work with people like them. You know, we're currently managing our 7 properties, so the ones that we own. And we're looking to take on a few clients there, you know, with this boutique business. So we're doing everything we can this year to give as much value as possible. I do believe in, you know, another cliche is abundance. I do believe in giving more than taking. So I'm very willing to give lots of information to people, even to a fault. And I may never hear from them again, or I might not do business with those people, but I hope that what I impress upon them is enough that they'll recommend us to somebody else who will. So I'm a big believer in that.
Yes, lots of good information, and, you know, kind of get your head on your shoulders with the right sort of outlook for the future. And at the end of all my episodes, I do ask my guests a random question that doesn't have to do with anything we've been talking about. So my question for you is, who do you want with you in a zombie apocalypse?
So I actually have been in situations where I feel as though a zombie apocalypse could happen in the specific setting in which I was, meaning there's like a specific intersection in Boston that when I would leave work, I'd be like, that feels like where zombie apocalypse is going to begin. But I've never considered who I'd want with me during that zombie apocalypse. What do you think? It should be somebody. Do I want somebody cunning or fast or smart? I don't know what I want.
You could always have
or strong
all of them and have multiple people with you if you really want.
Yeah. I mean, zombie apocalypses are interesting because really what is left with the world if we are going to have a zombie apocalypse? You know, I've seen Walking Dead and I see what happens. Like, we all know how the story ends. The people that are left are just hangers on, and they build their own society, but who wants to live in that society? So I don't know. I don't think I would need to have anybody with me with a zombie apocalypse because I don't really think I'm going to survive it. I don't think any of us are going to. So you might as well just give in to the zombies.
All right, that brings this episode to a close. So, of course, if you'd like to connect with Jason and all of the good work and businesses he's got going on, there, of course, will be links in the description. His main website can bring you to all of the good things. But, of course, I'll also leave the website for Pride Away Stays, and I'll also leave his podcast YouTube channel in the description. So feel free to go check all of that out. Of course, if you'd like to connect with our podcast, our website is in the description. It brings you to our social media. We are on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn. It brings you to all of our past episodes, resources, social media, all of those good things. So your support is always appreciated. If you'd like to support monetarily, there is a link to do that as well. And if you would like to be a guest on the show and share your story, my email is in the description. That is always the best way to reach me. So thank you so much, Jason, for spending time with me today, and to my listeners for taking the time out of your day to hear a new story. Until next time, bye.
Bye. Thank you.